Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court.
You may proceed.
In my time this morning, I would like to focus on two issues in this case. The first is the district court's denial of Mr. Gaither's request for leave to amend his complaint on the grounds of on the issue of equitable tolling, which I submit to the court is outcome determinative in this case. It affected the remainder of the district court's ruling. And the second issue I'd like to focus on is the sufficiency of Mr. Gaither's allegations concerning the racially discriminatory intent and the district court's denial of his request for leave to amend on that issue as well.
So you agree the claims are time barred without equitable tolling?
Yes, Your Honor. We do not contest that the complaint, that the lawsuit was filed after the applicable statute of limitations had run. And so the equitable tolling issue, as I said, is outcome determinative in this matter.
And what's the standard of review for that? Abuse of discretion?
Yes, Your Honor. The standard of review for the denial of equitable tolling is abuse of discretion. There's a little nuance to that. Because this is a 12B6 dismissal on the pleadings, as we point out in brief and as this court's ruling in the TMAC case says, the well-pleaded allegations are taken as true in this. In this court's review of that. And so the district court abused its discretion in denying Mr. Gaither a leave to amend his complaint on the basis of equitable tolling. We've argued that Mr. Gaither alleged facts, which taken as true, support a theory of equitable tolling, but the district court disagreed on that. One thing I'd like to address first is a argument made by the appellee of the bank regarding basically that Mr. Gaither already had an opportunity to amend his complaint to fix deficiencies at the outset of this suit in the federal court. Now, what happened is after removal, the district court issued a sort of a standardized order. Basically, it was directed to both parties and said that amendment needed to take place to conform to the federal rules of civil procedure. It appeared to be a perfunctory order that is done in every removal before that court. The appellee in its briefs has said that it was ordered because of identified specific deficiencies, but there were no identified specific deficiencies. That it was, as I said, kind of a standardized order. In his opposition to the 12B6 motion, Mr. Gaither did request leave to amend as to any deficiencies that the district court identified. And this court has ruled that there is a bias in favor of granting leave to amend.
What were the facts that he did not allege in his first complaint that he would have alleged had he been allowed to amend?
Well, Your Honor, in the original complaint, he did allege a chronology of events, and the operative fact for equitable tolling is the confrontation with the branch manager. I wasn't trial counsel at that time. I can't speak to what would be alleged differently specifically.
But you have to, because you have to show that he diligently pursued his rights. Well, he didn't allege that in his first complaint. So what are the facts that were missing that were prevented from being included in an amended complaint?
Well, Your Honor, I would submit that Mr. Gaither did plead the operative concealment of the information that the bank employees obfuscated the identity of the branch manager, which we argue led to the admission that service could be denied for without justification, which in the context of the other outrageous and harassing conduct that Mr. Gaither alleged, we've argued gives rise to a reasonable inference of discriminatory intent. Now, he didn't know that until he confronted the branch manager. His diligence was in investigating what had happened to him. The operative question is, why did these things happen to me? And so he didn't, the diligence was him investigating what happened. And then when he confronted the branch manager, he gets this admission of, there's no explanation of, well, that's a neutral policy that gets applied. There's no explanation of, this bank employee made a mistake and we're very sorry. It was, we can refuse service to you without justification. And in the context of the refusal to let him pay off his loan, then accusing him of presenting a fraudulent check, which Mr. Gaither alleged, then sabotaging the wire transfer, all taken together, we've we've
submitted. Yeah, but he knew all that with well within the statutory period for limitations. So what facts was he not able to allege that shows that he diligently pursued his rights and therefore should be entitled to equitable tolling? I'm not hearing it.
Well, that's really the issue, Your Honor.
No, I know it's the issue. That's why I'm asking.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And you've got to be able to show why it is the district court abused its discretion in not giving you leave to amend. So what facts were there that he would have pled had he been allowed to amend?
Well, the problem with the district court's ruling, Your Honor, is that it didn't give any analysis or any rationale for its denial of his.
I'm asking what your client's facts are as far as diligently pursuing his rights. He's the one who has to give an explanation to show an abuse of discretion on the part of the district court. And it's really, I think I've got this right, it's an abuse of discretion within abuse of discretion. Applying equitable tolling is within the court's discretion.
Yeah.
Granting leave to amend the complaint to plead additional facts to revisit that decision would be another discretionary, and granted leave should be freely granted, but it's still within the court's discretion. So I'm asking what was missing, what facts would have been pled or would be pled that weren't pled in the first complaint?
Well, for example, and Your Honor, candidly speaking, the date of the confrontation was not pled. Obviously, the date of the confrontation would be pled in an amended pleading, and that may be the basis for the district court. I can't really speak to the basis of the district court's ruling because it was silent as to why it denied leave to amend on equitable tolling. As we discussed in our brief, the rationale for denial of leave to amend only concerned the 1981 claim, and it was based on futility. Now, of course, there was no finding of futility in this case with regard to equitable tolling, which, of course, would be kind of circular in nature because
Well, it's futile if it's barred by the statute of limitations.
Yeah, yes. But if Mr. Gaither has facts which fully support the equitable tolling, that would obviously defeat the statute of limitations.
I'm still not hearing what those facts are.
And Your Honor, I would submit one, and I was not trial counsel, but...
But you got to know the facts of the case.
Yeah, yes, Your
You're
Honor.
Up here asking us to reverse the district court, send this back, and revive these claims, but you can't tell me why.
Yes, Your Honor, and the operative fact would obviously be the date of the confrontation, which is not in the
and
record.
Why couldn't you have pled that in the first go?
Well, Your Honor, again, I was not trial counsel, but... It simply wasn't pled, but Mr. Gaither did ask for.
You're not going to rely on anymore. I wasn't trial counsel.
Yes, sir.
So you might as well just
yes,
not even say it again. You're here.
Yes, sir.
So you're it. You got to know everything he or she knew or didn't do for purposes of providing us with things.
Yes, sir. Well, Mr. Gaither, the big fact that Mr. Gaither did not allege would have been the date of the confrontation with the branch manager.
When was it?
I don't know the date specifically, Your Honor. But
see, counsel, you can't show up here as appellate counsel and no answer to these questions. I mean, we could have NOA'd this case. We put it on for argument for a reason, in order to be able to ask counsel these questions. And I mean, that's the whole point. We know, we read it, we know what it's about. But
yes.
If you don't know the answers, I mean, that's telling.
Yes, Your Honor, and respectfully, the issue we're here today about was whether the district court should have given Mr. Gaither leave to amend during this proceeding to flesh this out with the information that was in front of it at that time. And amendment is favored under the law.
But you haven't answered the question Judge Wilson's asked you several times. What is it he didn't know that he couldn't have known beforehand that, you know, you can't just show up late saying, you know, I need more time. You have to show you diligently pursued it, et cetera. Somebody hit it, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I don't see that that's what's alleged in the first. I mean, at most is you're saying he made a mistake.
Yes, Your Honor. It's not that Mr. Gaither is saying, oh, I didn't know this person's identity, therefore I need more time. It's that I didn't know that my action accrued until I discovered the motivation behind this conduct by confronting the branch manager. And The amendment to flesh out the date of that confrontation is critical. And Mr. Gaither asked for leave to amend to flesh out his allegations.
But the confrontation of the bank manager, that's where you said the bank manager told him that, I mean, allegedly told him, we can refuse service for any reason.
Yes, sir.
Was there any more to that interaction?
No, not in the record.
So there's no facts that are omitted from what you would plead with regard to the actual confrontation with the manager. I'm putting that in quotes.
Not that I'm aware of. Just based on, I mean, being candid, in my discussions with my client, we haven't gone into that. But the confrontation as alleged, we submit, is sufficient in the context of the other treatment to give rise to Mr. Gaither discovering at that time the discriminatory intent that the bank showed in its actions.
And I guess I'm having a real problem. If all that was said to him in this, what we're calling a confrontation, I don't know that it was that even, but if all that was said to him is, we can deny a check without justification, or words to that effect. I don't know how that suddenly turns on the light bulb that I was discriminated against based on race.
Well, that's a fair observation, Your Honor. What Mr. Gaither alleged, one, that he tried to pay off his mortgage. They said you have to present a certified check or a wire. So, and then they accuse him of trying to submit a fraudulent check. Then Mr. Gaither tries to comply with that. He gets wiring instructions from a different institution. He takes the instructions back to the bank. He alleges that they intentionally put in an incorrect account number to sabotage this wire transfer, and it gets denied. Then, after this, Mr. Gaither alleges that he presents a non-certified check after.
And you're saying, because I thought that it was admitted that was a mistake with this number being incorrect. So you're saying that wasn't a mistake, it's deliberate. I mean, that's like alleging that somebody that you want to pay off doesn't want to be paid off. I mean,
yes, Your Honor.
It's just illogical to me to say that they would refute, they would mess up. This was going to be some kind of a wire transfer, right?
Yes, sir.
So, and now you're saying they deliberately sabotaged that because he was black? I don't want your money because you're black.
Mr. Gaither alleges that they deliberately sabotaged, and accepting all well pleaded facts is true, and all inferences in his favor as the law requires. They sabotaged the transfer, and then after this, he brings in a non certified check. Then in an about face from their original statement, they accept that. So what we have is 3 days of alleged harassment that Mr. Gaither has, asserted.
He didn't know was harassment until he talked to somebody at the bank some years later, I guess. And then they say we can deny a check without justification. And suddenly he realizes he's discriminated.
That's correct, because he tries to find out why the bank treated him in this way. And he alleges that the bank obfuscates the identity of the manager, delaying him from speaking to them. When he talks to the manager doesn't give a neutral policy explanation. They don't give
It's boilerplate. How in the world is it not neutral?
Well, the intentional putting in the wrong account number on the wire transfer.
Okay, so went and paid my mortgage one time. And I filled out the deposit slip or whatever, gave them the check. They transposed my loan number. So a few months, weeks later, I guess it was, I got a call from the bank. When are you going to pay your mortgage? And I started getting repeating calls, when are you going to pay your mortgage? You haven't paid your mortgage. I said, well, I've paid my mortgage. So I sent the slip back to them. They realized their error, and they corrected it and reversed the charges. They had credited somebody else's account. So I've got a bunch of federal claims, apparently, against the bank, under your theory. Is that right?
Well, Your Honor, it's important to...
No, is that right?
Well, I'm sorry, can you please repeat the question there, Your Honor?
I'm saying they incorrectly credited another account with my payment, and then when they called me to harass me about paying, I gave them the receipt, they corrected it, reversed the charges and all that. But apparently, I had federal claims all along.
Well, Your Honor,
They were obfuscated.
If that is your allegation, and again, this is a 12B6 proceeding.
I get it.
And this is what Mr. Gaither has alleged. And in the context of what happened, Your Honor, Mr. Gaither alleged that this harassment took place, and then when he investigated as to the why, that all they said was, well, we can do that without justification. And Mr. Gaither's position is that at that point he became aware of the discriminatory intent. And at this point, I see that I'm out of time.
When you come back on rebuttal, help at least me understand how all of that you said translates into a racial matter.
Yes, sir.
Because that's what he's claiming. You said, you know, they conspired to sabotage, you use those words, et cetera, et cetera. But at least I've missed, you haven't said the race of the people he was dealing with, and so on and so forth. So at least when you come back up, if that's helpful to do so, but if you don't know the answers, then fine. All right, let's hear from counsel officer. Is this a case of somebody's feelings got hurt by the bank because they messed up in paying for the mortgage and this has turned into a federal case?
Good morning, Your Honor. May I please the court? Dylan Bensinger from McGuire Woods on behalf of the appellees. We think that is, yes, all this is. Your Honors have identified several reasons on the merits and on the actual ins and outs of equitable tolling, why this case should have been and was properly dismissed below. I think it's even simpler than that. You heard counsel say that he is entitled to the assumption by Your Honors that all well-pleaded facts are true. And as Judge Graves pointed out, the question for equitable tolling, even if he's entitled to it, is when the light bulb went off in his head, this was a racial discrimination case. And if you look at paragraph 16 of his complaint, that's record page 71, he says that after a conversation with a bank branch employee named Ron, he went home and had an adverse emotional reaction over the humiliation of a check not being accepted due to his ethnicity. So it seems to me that after that conversation, the light bulb went off in his head that there was a potential alleged race discrimination claim. In paragraph 2 of his complaint, he alleges that conversation took place on July 14th, 2020. Let's pretend that he's entitled to the entire 4 years of his statute of limitations past that point. His claims are still untimely. He still filed them 6 months late in January 2025. That, we submit, is the end of the analysis in this case, even if you were to take all of the allegations in the complaint as true as pleaded.
And I'm assuming all the persons he dealt with at the bank, white or other than African American, is in the scenario of people alleged, is Mr. Gaither the only person who's African American?
It's unclear because Mr. Gaither doesn't actually identify any of those people. He says that there is someone he remembers as being named Ron. He says the second person was an employee he does not name. The bank branch manager he does not name or identify in any way. He brings this claim against someone named Jessica Carter, but as we've mentioned in our briefing, we have not been able to identify anyone named Jessica Carter who has ever worked at the bank branch that he alleges these events took place at. So
ultimately, his loan was paid off, right?
That's correct. On July 16th, 2020, his loan was paid off.
So were any of the persons who were sued the ones who processed successfully paying the mortgage off?
Well, the only person that he has named individually is Jessica Carter, and there is no employee by the name of Jessica Carter that has ever worked at that bank branch. So it's unclear who he meant when he said Jessica Carter, and it's doubly unclear because he's not made any substantive allegations against Ms. Carter in the complaint itself.
Well, who are the other people named at all?
The two appellees here are Bank of America and Jessica Carter. Those are the two appellees.
Okay. So Jessica Carter is the only individual name.
Correct, Your Honor.
I said differently, none of the people who he had conversations with in the context of his complaint is named Jessica Carter.
That's correct, because Jessica Carter has never worked at this bank branch to the extent she is an employee of the bank. So, you know, that is an alternative merits ground to dismiss the claims against her if he's not made any allegations substantively against Jessica Carter. But again, we think that's kind of an academic issue here because of the statute of limitations.
Did anybody ever apologize to him for the mistakes or errors? Because seemingly there was some error in terms of something.
Mr. Gaither even alleges that the bank branch manager apologized during what he's calling the confrontation. If you go to paragraph 18 of his complaint, Mr. Gaither says the bank branch manager, quote, apologized, but then stated that Bank of America can refuse service to people without justification. So even as Mr. Gaither alleges, yes, there was an apology for what was, as alleged, a very frustrating experience for Mr. Gaither. I'd like to address the merits just in case the court is unconvinced that statute of limitations have run and Mr. Gaither is not entitled to.
You can do it just in case, but I can't imagine you're going to need 15 minutes, so go right ahead.
I imagine not, Judge Graves. But as Your Honors have identified, on the merits of the race discrimination claim and on the merits of the intentional infliction claim, nothing as alleged rises anywhere near the level of racially discriminatory conduct here. As I think Judge Wilson and Judge Graves have said, the without justification comment is a race-neutral statement. It's the same thing as hanging a sign in your window saying we reserve the right to refuse service to anyone. Nothing about that was
keep your voice up.
Sorry.
Keep your voice up.
Nothing about that was racially charged. And there's precedent from this circuit up and down, including just last year in a case called Strong v. Bank of America, where a retail bank customer attended multiple bank branches, requested a cashier's check, was denied, and presumed that the reason that she was denied was because of race discrimination. That's exactly what we have here. There's nothing except Mr. Gaither's subjective presumption that the reason he was unable to pay off his mortgage for a couple of days was race discrimination. The same is true with the intentional infliction claim, because that is the entire basis of his intentional infliction claim. But again, our position is that we don't even get there because it's a matter of state substantive law in Texas. If an intentional infliction claim is subsumed within another claim, like it is here within the 1981 claim, that claim should be dismissed at the pleading stage. And Your Honors can look to the Roe decision in this court or the Hoffman-LaRoche decision in the Texas Supreme Court. So in case, or unless Your Honors have any other questions for me, I'll yield back
good.
To the other side.
Thank you, sir. All right, back to you, Mr. Close.
And Your Honor, briefly, I'd like to address Judge Stewart's question that we left off on. Why is this a racial matter? What facts did Mr. Gaither allege that ties everything together, making this a racial discrimination case? Mr. Gaither, as we've talked about, he alleged outrageous harassing conduct, the accusation of presenting a fraudulent check, the intentional sabotage of the wire transfer. And Your Honor, again, this is a 12B6 motion. We take Mr. Gaither's well-pleaded facts as true and resolve all reasonable inferences in his favor.
The emphasis is on well-pleaded facts.
Yes, Your Honor.
That's the emphasis. Well-pleaded facts, not just anything.
Yes, Your Honor. But Mr. Gaither alleges also that he's an African-American man. He's that this bank is in a predominantly Caucasian area.
Well, who else? Who is Jessica Carter?
Mr. Gaither joined Jessica Carter as a bank, as a either a bank employee or a bank manager. It's unclear from the pleading what context or what capacity she was joined in. But the operative claims in this complaint are against the bank itself, against the bank employee, Mr. Ron, and against the bank itself, as Mr. Gaither discovers in his later confrontation with the manager. And to go back to your question about why is this a racial matter, the bank points to the Strong case.
Does he allege anybody in the complaint who was not African-American or any of that?
No, Your Honor, there's no comparator allegation of...
Well, I don't mean comparator, but I mean, if somebody from Mars filed this complaint, I mean, how would, from the face of the complaint, you know, it didn't have any indicia of a racial complaint as opposed to, you know, the bank messed up or something like that? That's the point.
And Your Honor, this is a case that's about more than just subjective feelings or hurt feelings, as the bank suggested. Mr. Gaither alleges, sorry, not strike that, the case stated by the bank, the strong case, that involved just pure subjective feelings.
No, don't tell me about the case. I'm asking about this. You're on 12B6. I'm saying at a minimum, if it was me, I would be alleging. I went in there and the person who talked to me was white. He talked down to me. You know, he wasn't paying attention to me, yada, 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 to make it plain that I think it's because I'm black. I mean, that wouldn't be hard for me to articulate. It just wouldn't. Now, whether it stands the test, ultimately, that's a whole different deal. But if you allege somebody who, he says, doesn't even work for the bank, that doesn't indicate any due diligence to investigate a complaint. So you don't just get to file something and hide under 12B6. The rule says well-pleaded allegations. And you haven't made an argument yet as to how it's, quote, well-pleaded in terms of the racial animus here. And that's what the district court granted the 12B6, that it was not well-pleaded.
Yes, Your Honor. And our position is that from this sequence of events and then the only explanation being that they can refuse service without justification, that it can be reasonably inferred based on Mr. Gaither's race and based on the area that the bank is located in, that there is a discriminatory intent. But Your Honor, at this stage, Mr. Gaither is entitled to. Let me go back. In this court's opinion, Causey, it provides that the. What the court's looking for is an inference that can be made from the facts. Now, we submit that in this case, there was no other explanation for this conduct. And no other explanation was provided, just that we can do this without justification. So the operative takeaway from that, you know, disclosure is, one, it was intentional, and then two, it had no justification. And so the only conclusion that Mr. Gaither could come to was that it was racially motivated. There was no other, because he alleges that it's done by different employees, Mr. Ron and then this other unnamed employee with regard to the wire transfer. That's the only conclusion Mr. Gaither could realistically come to, was that it was based on his race.
That's a stretch if I ever heard one. I mean, you're an able advocate, and I know you wanted that light to get red in a hurry. You know, I mean, you've done your best on this one, but it's just not working, speaking for myself. But in any event, you've exhausted your time, and we appreciate the briefing and the argument. The case will be submitted.
Thank you, Your Honor.